Good evening, Chris Lee and Alfred Esmond, of Southeastern 16, here to talk Super Regional Baseball, the College World Series, whatever limbo we're in at the moment. Some of you, your teams are still playing. Some of you, your teams will play tomorrow. Some of your team has clinched it. Some of you, your team is in the middle of clinching an Omaha berth. Then we have whatever's going on with A&M and Oregon. I'll have to tune that one back in as we speak. Alfred, crazy day in baseball. We'll get to that in just a minute. You were in Clemson for what had to be one of the best and most dramatic NCAA baseball games ever played. We'll get into that. We'll talk about Tennessee's impending win over Evansville. We'll get into A&M Oregon. We'll get into Georgia's blowout of NC State. And I think Kentucky will be starting, or maybe has started. We've had a day here at the Lee household. Yes. I'll just leave it at that. No air conditioning. That's not a good time to have that happen.
Yikes.
So we've been adjusting on the fly around here, opening windows and all that stuff. But anyway, before we get into breaking down what happened today, a reminder, we're brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoffs. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's start with the first game. We'll just go in order of first pitch today to talk about these. This Georgia NC State Super Regional, no pun intended, has just been a dog. 18-1 NC State yesterday. Today, Georgia wins this one 11-2. Now, I said after Leighton Finley and Brian Zeiden, I didn't know how much pitching Georgia had left. Well, they used both those guys today in an 11-2 win. Georgia gets home runs from Corey Collins, Slade Alford, Paul Tates, Trey Phelps. The Bulldogs jumped NC State early, got two in the first, three in the third, four in the fourth, and then one in the sixth, seventh, and eighth. To even the series and take this thing to Monday. Yeah, I think NC State's pitching kind of collapsed early with Dominic Fritton, and Georgia really took the drama out of this one pretty early.
Yeah, tale of two tapes this series. I mean, I said yesterday, you know, Georgia had to forget about last game, and they sure as heck did. Very efficient pitching, like you said, Chris. They used only Finley and Zeldin, only two arms today, which is very nice after, you know, what they went through yesterday. And the biggest thing that stood out to me about Finley was the hits. You know, NC State hit the ball pretty well, respectively speaking, nine hits on the day. Finley gave up eight of them, but it was how he was able to manage those runners on the base paths that really led to his success. He only walked two guys. He forced NC State to get hits. And then ultimately he gave up one earned run. So, you know, NC State wasn't able to create a lot of scoring with the runners in position like, you know, they did yesterday. Struck out, Finley went out and struck out five as well. And then hitting top to bottom, I'll give the Dogs credit. Charlie Condon had another kind of quiet day, one for four. But his co-stars were the ones who stepped up. I mean, you got Corey Collins having two RBIs, Trey Phelps with four, Alford with two. Obviously, those guys homered. Tates was another guy. Yeah, Tates was another guy who homered. Sorry. Wow, I butchered that. But he's another guy that homered. And good close on that game from Zeldin, too. Two and a third, one earned run. That was Cozart's homer there late for State. But, yeah, I mean, Georgia needed to win this game, and they won in commanding fashion. They sort of create a flip-a-coin kind of story heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just not sure what pitching they've got left. I mean, I know they've got some arms, but they have been running on fumes for a while. And I think now the good news is they only threw 135 pitches today. Finley threw 107 of those. I don't know if they, you know, we've seen some teams do some pretty crazy stuff with pitching. You may or may not have seen one of those today. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know that I trust their pitching to get through tomorrow, but hey, it's the NCAA tournament. It's crazy. These guys hit home runs like there's tomorrow, no tomorrow. So, and for Georgia, there is no tomorrow if they lose. So it'll be very interesting to see what goes down in Athens on Monday.
Yes, for sure. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think it's a little closer. I mean, I still said Dogs in three. Obviously, the pitching is going to be the main concern. I think you kind of got to get a good Condon day. You haven't really seen him show up as much as he has normally this series. I think that's a big key. I honestly think that's the number one thing heading into tomorrow is getting a big day out of him. And then if you could get a few of the support guys, you know, Collins, Phelps, Tate, so just so I say it right on camera, some of those guys, if you can get them going as well, yeah, you know, it could be cakes and candles for Georgia. But once again, it's not a gimme. This is a flip a coin kind of game heading into tomorrow. I think it's the game to watch tomorrow, depending on what happens later on in the night as of right now. So, yeah, big game, big win for Georgia today, and they'll look to clinch Omaha coming on Monday.
All right, we're probably going to do an hour tonight. Mm-hmm. We could do an hour just on Florida Clemson alone. Again, you were in the ballpark for that one, and I presume in O'Sullivan's press conference afterwards. I don't even know where to start with this one. I think you brought up that they might throw Neely. I think I kind of laughed you off. Boy, was I wrong about that. I was wrong about a lot of things with Florida, which I did not have the Gators winning in Stillwater and not in Clemson. But here we are with Florida, the first team to punch its ticket to Omaha. The Gators threw 212 pitches today. The game lasted 5 hours and 4 minutes, and I'll just let you take it from here.
Yeah, I was in there every second on a personal level, and I don't know if there was anyone watching who was in that ballpark or anyone who will watch who was in that ballpark. One of the greatest games you and I, whoever you are out there, will ever see. I just think top to bottom, you had everything in that game as far as action goes. And Chris, I hate to burst your bubble. I was not at the press conference because I had to rush back here for this. It killed me walking back to my car. I was like, I know I'm about to get back at like 9 o'clock, you know, Eastern, and it's going to be a time crunch. So I headed back here. Go back and watch it, though. I'm going to go back and watch it. I mean, it's going to be that good. Where do I start? I guess I'll start at the beginning of the game. We had Knack and Caglione going at it with one another. Really good pitching matchup. Aiden Knack, arguably Clemson's number one arm. That's TBD. But in my opinion, he's up there as one of them. Caglione, we know what he can do. Both of them, gave up a lot of runs, but I think there were times when both of them kind of settled in and were able to hold the lineups for the most part. You look at the beginning of that game, Caglione, God, he's saying his name again, homer to center field. That one went over the batter's eye. It was clobbered out the center. And then Hinderleiter, who was big today for Clemson, had a double as well to get the Tigers on the board eventually in the third. They had a 3-run third to tie the game because Florida would come back with some runs of their own to make it tied. And then back and forth we went. It was Shelton having a big game, Overtop homered for Clemson. Brody Dinay had a good homer for Florida as well. And if you went into this game, Chris, and you didn't know Cam Cannarella's name, you knew it after.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my Lord. He is going to have a great season next year at Clemson. I mean, I cannot wait to watch him. He had that game-tying 3-run homer. That Doug Kingsmore erupted at that. And then a guy who had a really good day and who's been having a good postseason in general for Florida, Ashton Wilson, had a line drive to center. And it looked like Cannarella was going to get there, but it was going to be the most difficult catch ever. And it was, and he made it. You told me, and I looked back and saw it, coming out of his glove, tucked against his side, hit the wall, still managed to hold on to it. And that saved the game in the bottom of the 10th. I skipped a lot of stuff, but just for the sake of time. You know, this game did go to extras and it did go to 13 innings, and there was all the drama in the world you could have. Caglione and I'm trying to think of what Clemson player it was that went at it. Rocky went at it with one another.
Yeah.
And there was a weird thing that happened. Crichton.
Two coaches out late. Yeah. I mean, it was bizarre.
Yes. Yeah. Crichton got ejected for hitting an ump, and it wasn't even, I was like sitting there thinking, they're going to throw out, possibly Caglione and, Naraki for, shoving each other on the first baseline. Then I'm like, well, that's like a warning, type stuff. You see that all the time in baseball and sports in general. And then they pulled that out of the bag. And then, coaches were getting ejected at the end of that game. It was just insane. And you said it, and I'm going to toot my own horn here. Brandon Neely has been on one, and I think it's just going to continue to be on one throughout this tournament. 4 innings. He did give up 3 earned runs, gave up that game-tying homer Cannarella had. But still, I mean, 4 strikeouts. He went out there, pitched a ton of pitches after going for a ton last night. And then eventually late in that game, the other Florida pitcher I want to mention, Luke McNeely, who we hadn't seen yet, did his job. He gave up the, I believe it was, I'm trying to think who, goodness, I'm, rambling right now. Alden Mathis had that home run to take the lead for Clemson in the top of the 13th. That was the only run McNeely gave up, but he would go on to earn the credit for the win. And eventually Florida just, you know, finding ways to find ways. And really it was Clemson just kind of, you know, constantly making these plays to come back and back over and over again. And Florida was just on the wrong end of them. The Cannarella three-run shot, that Mathis homer that gave them the lead. But, you know, when it came down to it, it was Michael Robertson, hero of the day. Two runners on, second and third. That came off of a weird play in which Hinderleiter and I believe, who was it? It was their second baseman. Purify. Thank you. That's who it was. Purify and Hinderleiter collided on a weird play. That allowed Florida to get runners in scoring position. And then Robertson clutch double into the gap in left center, and Florida walks it off. Craziest baseball game this year, unless someone can tell me one other one. That, to me, that's the craziest game we've had. And yeah, here come the Gators, 14th time in Omaha in program history. And who would have thought that I could probably count the numbers on my hand for who thought, you know, they would be in this position. And here they are. This is the Florida we expected to see during the year, and they're coming alive at the very right time.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Cam Cannarella. That catch, if you didn't see it, Florida had what, bases loaded, two out in the ninth, and was it Ashton Wilson, who, you know, nobody knew 2-3 weeks ago till they had injuries, and he's been playing and has been playing really well.
Yeah.
Hit a screamer to center that, if you didn't see the catch, people were putting up images of that catch side by side with the famous Willie Mays catch in the Polo Grounds in the, what was it, the 54 World Series or whatever it was, that, you know, supposed to be the best outfield catch of all time. And I mean, that was different. Polo Grounds, it was about 600 feet to center. I mean, it wasn't that many, but it was ridiculous
far. Yeah.
And so he ran forever. Cannarella was playing shallow, and he ran away. Now, I don't know if he ran as long as Willie, but the catch he made was no, I mean, I don't think they're doing Willie Mays disrespect by holding it up to that one. I mean, especially considering the spot they were in. I saw it. I was like, I don't think he had control of the ball, and he didn't. The ball hit him, I think, near the heel of the glove and rolled down, and somehow, with all his momentum running back against the wall, complete back to home plate, he managed to just pull the ball in as it popped loose and nestle it between his forearm and his chest, or his wrist and his chest, to make the out. Just one of the craziest plays you have ever seen. So that, number one. Number two, he hit the home run. And just the unlikely scenarios here, I don't know how many pitches McNeely threw yesterday. The box score I've got doesn't have that in front of me. I know he faced 13 batters and went 4 innings.
40-something.
So, yeah, he threw a lot of pitches to bring him back today. And Kevin O'Sullivan is one of the more conservative guys with arm usage. Today he just said, screw it. I'm going Neely or bust. And then he gave up the three-run home run to Cannarella that tied it, and then he left him in. We're all thinking he's going to take him out. And he had the mound visit, I think, one pitch before that one. And we're just going, okay, that's it. Because O'Sullivan, usually when he comes out, he doesn't have a lot of patience. But but he rode that one. You know, earlier, Caglione gave them 5 2/3, 4 runs. They got a little bridge work from Jack Clemente. And then Luke McNeely saved it in the end. So I've got a commotion in the other room, but we're all good. I've got a net. Talk about a night. I'm juggling two or three baseball games, and trying to keep tabs on Canadian Football League game that my nephew is playing in. It's the CFL opener tonight. It's a lot going on in the Lee House. Not to mention the AC went out. So. Anyway, I think my nephew must have made a catch because there was an eruption behind me. But anyway, let's carry on with baseball. Florida pulls it out. Michael Robertson, one of their weaker hitters, ends up getting the game winner in the end to walk them off. I'm not a fan of someone being able to walk off another team in their park. I think if you have home field advantage, you have earned it. I wish they'd just stick with it, but they don't. That's the rule. And Florida getting the chance to bat in the bottom. Was it the 13th or 14th? I think it was the 13th. Robertson walked it off with the single or double or whatever they scored it to center.
Yeah, I like you, and you said this at the beginning of this when we were talking about this game too, Chris. We could do an hour on that. We should have done a separate reaction for this game. I mean, this was just out of this world. Notable performances. I would have asked if I was in the room with O'Sullivan post game. I would have asked him about Shelton. He was phenomenal tonight. Yeah. 7 at bats. Him and Luke Heyman did not have a good day, but he also had 7 at bats. 3 RBIs out of that for Shelton. Very nice stuff. Wilson, of course, 2 RBIs for him. Caglione had the 2 RBIs with that home run at the beginning of the game. Robertson with 2, Donet with 2. Just down the list, just all these Florida guys are just getting the runs they need. And I'm just at a loss of words, you know, and especially that one catch too. I was like, you saw him running and you saw how fast that ball was going. I'm like, this is over. I mean, it's either out of here or it's over his head and off the wall. And he somehow pulled that off. Hats off to Cam Cannarella and all the rest of this Clemson team. I mean, they that was a good team. And they unfortunately ran into a hot Florida squad who just in the end found a way to win this game. Because it seemed like the entire game Florida had been playing better. And then once Clemson started coming back and having, of course, the Cannarella 3-run shot and all those big plays, it was like, all right, Clemson's going to hang around and pull this off somehow. And then Florida, right at the end, you know, pulls that Robertson, you know, hit, and it was all over from there. But yeah, I mean, very good game from them. Notable performances. Austin Gordon out of the bullpen from them too, Chris. I don't know if you watched him. 5 innings. He pitched like, it was like 85 pitches in relief. It was a Brandon Neely day, if I had to compare it. 10 strikeouts, only 2 earned runs during that stretch, and only 3 walks. Great work from him. The guys who came after him, though, I think this was big. Barlow and Titsworth, mostly Barlow. Trouble with his command. You know, that got Florida some base running back. Because Florida had a stretch, I think it was like around the 10th or 11th, where they didn't have a hit. And, you know, it was like, what happened to this lineup? They just went silent. And then Barlow's given up, you know, a few walks. It was only 2 walks, but it was big walks to kind of rekindle this offense's firepower. And I think that played a factor into it. But, you know, once again, I there's not a whole lot you can do there if you're Clemson. You played your rear end off that entire game, and it just a fabulous, fabulous performance from both teams. And congrats to Florida and Omaha and Clemson on a great year.
I know this is an SEC channel, but I got to ask, what was it like being in that stadium when Cannarella made that catch?
It was, it was phenomenal. I had people running around, you know, it was... There were all these big plays that happened during that game. I was the same spot, Chris, outside the press box on the high chairs. I can't remember who, there was some guy in there, right by the window. And the first time he looked at me was the Caglione homer at the beginning of the game. Cause that thing like sailed over the batter's eye. And I looked at him and I'm like, oh my goodness, that was so far. And then Cannarella happened, same reaction. The catch happened, same reaction. Robertson too. And I met up with him after the game, and I was like, that's the greatest baseball game I've ever seen in my life. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I have to say too, and I've been doing this, you know, however long, decades at this point. And it was just mind boggling. And, you know, a lot of the Clemson folk left that stadium feeling down, and, you know, rightfully so. Yeah. But there's so many just roller coaster emotions that game. That's something everyone in Doug Kingsmore will never forget if you're in that ballpark that night. So, I mean, incredible, incredible game. I don't know. We have Omaha coming up and we might see games like that, but this has a case to be the best game in this tournament. And like I said, this season, even on top of that. So, yeah, I mean, great, great performance from both squads.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're recapping these games in the order in which they first pitched today. So we talked a little bit about Georgia. You can catch that a little bit later. Georgia will face NC State tomorrow for one more. The winner of that will get Kentucky, right? Kentucky or Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I'm watching A&M and Oregon at the moment. They're in the 6th inning as we're doing this. Oregon's up 7-4. We'll get into them in just a minute. Because A&M has not looked good tonight, but it's still in this one.
Right. This is an
and they'll get the winner. Yeah, they'll get the winner of that. We'll see. You could see an A&M Florida matchup in Omaha first game.
Yeah, I mean,
be interesting.
That'll be really good. We're also shortly going to see, you know, if this holds, it's going to hold. Tennessee, Florida State. That's going to be a very good first game too in Omaha on that side of the bracket. So
yeah, I'm going to pull the old, you know, network news election night thing. I'm calling this race for Tennessee. you know, it's like this. Evansville is still, you know, could technically come back and win, but it's kind of like, you know, how are California and New York going to vote in the presidential election? I think some things are, you know, pretty much decided at this point. Right. I would lump that in the category. Interestingly, Tennessee throwing Nate Snead, I guess, trying to give him a little more confidence tonight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tennessee's got, I think, 7 home runs tonight. Is it by 7 different guys?
It is. Let me see.
Christian Moore's got 2 and Bargo's got 2. Bargo, the surprise starter. I guess the big thing for them, Xander Seekers came back, went 6 1/3 innings, and got 6 strikeouts. And now Snead on. Again, this one is we're doing this, in case you're catching this later, 12-1 in the 8th. So Tennessee will get Florida State in the first game in Omaha and presumably will face Jamie Arnold, who will be one of the better pitchers in the tournament. I would think that's how they'll line up. But, I mean, I don't know what to say about this one. Tennessee was just hitting bombs early and often. Evansville's poor starter probably got whiplash. They threw a freshman. It didn't go well. And then threw the Smith kid who threw yesterday, which I didn't really understand. That kid had 13 ERA. But I think they had 3 or 4 pretty good arms, and they were pretty much out of options going into today. So it was kind of hold your breath and hope you get an all-timer for somebody, and that was not coming today.
No, and Jacob Meyer came in after Smith, and he threw, I think, like 56 pitches or something like that yesterday, like just yesterday. So they were out of options, and it's kind of an anticlimactic, you know, ending to what this could have been. You know, we could have possibly seen Evansville pull this out, you know, on the rare chance. Me and you, though, heading into tonight, didn't think that. You know, we weren't, the thing we were concerned about was the top to bottom pitching from Tennessee yesterday wasn't on par at all. And now we hadn't seen that in quite some time. And tonight it wasn't the case. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't think Zekris jumped off the page, you know, with what he did tonight. He gave up 6 hits in 6 1/3. So that's like a hit per inning right around that. But the runs, I mean, no earned runs. He had 1 run that wasn't, you know, tagged to him. So a phenomenal night from Seacrest. He was, you know, in command this entire time. And he's been just as good of an arm as anyone else on that team in the starting rotation. So hats off to him. Yeah. As for the hitting from Tennessee, you know, it's like beating a dead horse at this point. I mean, they just hit home runs and overwhelm you. And if they do that, they're going to win. And that's the case going forward. It's obviously going to get harder when you play Florida State, Virginia, North Carolina. We'll do, you know, probably a separate preview on that, you know, more in detail. But, you know, with those teams, it'll be a lot harder. But nonetheless, I still think that's their formula, is they're just going to out hit you and just completely shell shock you with their ability to hit home runs. Is it because of their ballpark a little bit? Maybe. But at the same time, they've been doing it this consistently. Now it's just like, well, they can do it anywhere. And I mean, they'll be able to do it at Charles Schwab Field easily with that park factor is. I mean, it's just been their formula, and it came out tonight again. And Tony Vitello, man, that's 3 Omaha trips in 4 years. That is a very good thing to do. And he is starting to, I don't even think starting to anymore. He's entered that territory of, when is that title going to come? Which is what certain coaches have. And who knows, maybe this is the year, but it's right around the corner, to say the least, for him.
Yeah, there'll be some pressure on Omaha, the number one national seed, you know, playing Florida State, the team that's been there like, I think 28 times or something like that. Florida State has been Omaha. They're probably top 5 all time in appearances, have never won one. The pressure a little bit on both programs in different ways. But, yeah, you had 2 homers from Moore, I guess, if you're Tennessee. That was good to see him get back because he just didn't look right yesterday. They had him back at second base, made a couple of really nice plays in the field, including he snagged a liner that was going over second. They probably would have scored a run or two and certainly opened the door for a bigger inning. I think he got a ground ball out the next one. And so just making those 2 plays – really kept Evansville off the board early, kept them from getting any momentum. Blake Burke went 4 for 5, did not have one of the home runs, at least not yet. And they also got him from, let's see, I want to count this. Let's count the guys that had home runs in this super regional. We know Moore had two tonight. Burke had one already, right?
Right. I'll spoil this for you, Chris, if you want me to. I think I know what you're getting at.
Did everybody in the lineup hit a home run?
In the super? Eight out of nine. Eight out of nine of them did. Actually, hold on.
Dryling, I'm trying to think who didn't, because Ensley hit one. Dryling hit one.
I'm wrong. Amick hit one. Curly, Stark. Yeah, never mind. All nine guys.
Borgo right. Tonight. Now, who was their DH yesterday? They DH'd.
Chapman. Oh,
no, Chapman pinch hit. No, Moore was there. Moore was their DH yesterday.
That's right.
And they went Bradke Lowry at second. He didn't get one. I think he does have some pop. That's crazy. Everybody was in lineup tonight. Well, wait, did Tears get one? Yeah, ooh. Tears hit a double yesterday. He might be the only one that did not hit a home run in the Super Regional.
I was going to, well, what I thought you were going to
scrambling for box scores.
Well, what I'll help you out here. What I thought you were going to get at originally was how many have they just hit total? And the number I do know, they've hit 25 this NCAA tournament as a whole.
That's crazy.
That is remarkable numbers. And at first, I didn't think they were going to catch this.
Six games.
Yeah. And at first, I didn't think they were going to catch this LSU team from 97 in their record. But it's kind of still in the picture a little bit if they keep this pace heading into Omaha and maybe go a little bit beyond it. I don't know what they're at now. Heading into tonight, they were at 163. So that puts them at 170 now? Or a little bit below it? I mean, that's pretty.
I've lost count.
Yeah, it's somewhere around 170, maybe a little bit below it. So they're within 20 now of it. And they have plenty of Omaha games left to play. It honestly would help them if they want to beat that record. Not that that's their number one goal. If they drop a game, let's say to FSU, and they have more games to play, you know, to build off of that. But regardless, I mean, this team's power is ridiculous. And really, no one can keep up with it, at least from what we've seen. And it just continues to flourish. And shout out too to Dalton Bargo. We talked about Christian Moore and how that was a good bounce back. Dalton Bargo too, good depth piece. They can switch in. They switched him in during Hoover. They've done it throughout the year. He comes in and he explodes for his best game this season thus far, and probably his best game, you know, in his career. You know, I'd have to look at his Missouri stats to see what he did there in that game log, but I would like to think this is one of the best games in his career. And he's just another guy you can throw in there and hit bombs. So this Tennessee team is hitting the ball really hard and really hot heading into Omaha, and they're going to be a tough out regardless, even with the cursed number one seed.
All right, I'm looking at park factors. I found this on the Action Network. They're the latest ones to run park factors for college fields. Charles Schwab Field in Omaha's got a park factor of 0.85. which means you score 15% fewer runs in that park than you do most places. But here's the weird thing. Three-year park factor, 1.11, means they score 11% more than a typical college park. Six-year park factor, 1.01. I don't know what to make of that. Tennessee's park factor is, I want to say, 1.17, 1.18. I've looked this up before. And people are going, why does this matter? Well, it matters because it might help you a little bit, know a little bit more what kind of game is going to be played in Omaha. Tennessee's got a 1.17 park factor in the history of Lindsey Nelson, or as long as they've done it. And that's 17% more runs in an average park, and a 1.25 over 3 years. In fact, I'm going to see the three-year park factors. The lowest one in the country is Long Beach at 0.7. The highest, Nevada, 1.42. Tennessee is somewhere in the top 20. 1, 2, 3,
4. 18? That's what I thought I saw last time. Yeah. Yeah,
and some of these, like Austin Peay's ahead of them. Austin Peay's got a fence. I think it's 290 down one of the lines. Let me see what Florida State is, because Florida State plays in a little bit of a bandbox too.
Right. They have that
a chain link fence and right, and it's
right.
You know, here's the weird thing: their park factor is a one even, and a 0.98 the last couple of years. So must play home run friendly to right.
It might be too, Chris.
Maybe not so much to left. I don't know what that means, but
anyway. Yeah, it might be too. Florida air is the opposite of high altitude air. This is MLB stuff. Rockies, true. You know, we know the ball travels. Florida air, I don't know if Tallahassee's below sea level specifically, but if it is, that ball is going to kind of stay lower because it's getting pulled toward the ground. So little science note from Alfred tonight for everybody. That could be, I don't know, that could be just a bunch of, you know, hooey kablooey, but that would be one thing I think that possibly could play a factor into that. But yeah, I mean, they're sitting pretty even, so who knows, but it's kind of, I'm with you. It has sort of it's opposite of what I thought they'd be.
Yeah. What's altitude in Knoxville? 1800 feet or so?
Mm-hmm. Something like that along those lines.
I don't know how much of a difference it makes at that level. I mean, I think the big thing is that park has just got short porches.
Right.
Especially to ride. It's 320 with a short fence, I think, or is it 310? I don't remember.
I think it's 320 out there.
And anyway, it gets out if you've seen it. Yeah,
it gets out a lot. And I think, you know, we're in that side of the bracket, too. If we're going to keep talking about home runs, all those teams are just, if you like offense in college baseball, go watch that round robin double elimination group, North Carolina, Tennessee, Florida State, Virginia, because they're going to give you a lot of fun watches. We'll have to see how this, I mean, the other group, Florida can hit the ball too. You know, they're sixth in the country in home runs by themselves, and they've been that way all year. Yeah. So we'll see what that side of the bracket looks like as that kind of pans out. But I mean, we have some home run hitting teams, so that's really important to look at all that stuff. And with Tennessee, of course, it's the name of their game; it's how they win. So, yeah, very important stuff to look at.
Okay, thank you, Knoxville. Altitude about 880 feet. That was high. Now, you know, the Smokies. I know Klingman's Dome gets up over 5,000 feet. You know, that's a little ways off. And, you know, I don't know what that is from the campus, probably an hour and a half. I don't know, but
something like that. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah. I mean, it rises quick. And I knew that there was a little bit more elevation as you got that way, but I couldn't remember how. I mean, I think the biggest reason is that just the short porches, but I mean, it didn't matter. The balls they were hitting tonight were, some of those were getting out of Yellowstone Park. So, it'll be interesting because Schwab and I've been like, the year LSU set the home run record, I was actually out at, that was when they played in, oh, good grief. It was the old park. If you said the name, I'd know. It was, they played the College World Series, and that was a bandbox. I mean, ball got out in a hurry. In Omaha, Charles Schwab, now again, it's played a lot more hitter-friendly the last couple of years. But sometimes you'll have a wind that'll push in from right center, and it can be hard to get the ball out that way. So it'll just depend on the conditions. It'll be hot out there. It's a little drier out there than it is. I've spent a lot of time in Nebraska. My wife's from there. And it's also windy. But again, that can go either way. So it'll be very interesting because that will be the bomb hitting side of the bracket on the left side there. Cause you got four teams that can all launch them. And again, I would expect Tennessee to get Jamie Arnold in game one, who I'm guessing is probably the best starting pitcher on any team in that side of the bracket.
Yeah, I would say so too. At least starting wise. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think. I got to look more. I will admit, I got to look more, and we will during this week, look more into Virginia. Will. Yeah, and North Carolina and them, and especially since we have, you know, a healthy summit tournament games to look at this point with those four. And it's going to be a home run hitting side. And by the way, Chris, Johnny Rosenblatt, does that sound right?
Rosenblatt Stadium, of course. I don't know why I went blank.
Yes, I've seen the clips. That was that the same year Morris, the home famous home run against Miami? Or maybe no, a year
that
before.
Was not that year. Warren Morris was 95-ish, maybe.
Okay. So a little bit before that, but
yeah, I was there watching Brandon Larson and Brad Cressy and
I see.
Oh gosh, the first baseman whose kid plays at Ole Miss now. Yeah, I mean, it was bombs away. They locked up with Southern Cal in a game that, you know, that I think it was almost a football score for both teams. So I remember seeing some of that one. So Yeah, it's starting to play. Baseball's starting to play more like it was around 98 in terms of the, you know, the home runs and everything. But again, that's going to be, that has traditionally been a much more pitcher friendly park. So right. we'll see, you know, which again, all four teams hit home runs. So I'm not sure if that advantages or disadvantages anybody. It just is. It's, you know, if you're expecting to see two teams combined for 11 home runs, I'm going to guess you're not going to get that. Although again, it has played more hitter friendly. So, all right, we're going to concede to Tennessee, which goes to the ninth with a 12-1 lead. All right, let's talk A&M. And we talked about, would they start Tanner Jones? I said I didn't think they would. I thought they'd start Shane Sadeo. They did. He got one out. Faced three hitters. And to be fair, I didn't catch the start of this game. I guess he just got hit. They took him out. Then they went to Brad Rudess, who wasn't any better. Then they went to Jones, who wasn't any better. And now there's a parade of bullpen arms. They are on Zane Badmaev, who is the transfer from Tarleton State, who's thrown a scoreless inning against four hitters so far, and Traylon Oregon 8-4 in the seventh.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that stands out. They just went through a platoon of pitchers, it looks like, and you know they kind of just, you know, got caught on their heels, so to speak, tonight. They got to Grayson Grinsell, the Oregon starter, a little bit. Six hits, four earned runs, and four innings. And I just think Rock Moore, who's on the mound now, is, you know, kind of starting to shut them down a bit. Just one hit through two innings. You know, that's not a whole lot, but it's a start at least for them. And yeah, with A&M, I guess looking down the who's hit tonight, Hayden Schott, he's been on one, 3-for-3 with an RBI. Lavalette's in there with a hit. Appel with another good game, 2-for-3. You know, I guess the biggest thing too that I can point out, Caden Kent, who we're deeming, I guess for now I'll deem Montgomery's replacement just because of yesterday's game, 0-for-2 so far. He does have an RBI, so he must have a sacrifice in there tonight. But yeah, I just think Oregon's just hitting a little slightly better. I'm looking down Oregon's list here. Mason Neville, 3 hits. Dominic Hellman, 2 hits. Chase Meggers, 1 hit. Drew Smith, 2 hits. Anson Arose, 2 hits. And then Carter Garrett and then Bryce Boucher down there with 1 hit each as well. So Oregon's just like rallying up the hit column, and that's eventually, you know, causing them to get runs, and it's starting to starting to force A&M and Schlossnagel to run through their pitching. And there's still time in this game. I mean, I'm looking at it top of the seventh with how A&M's lineup is. That's not safe. You know, I mean, you're within a grand slam with some baseball left, but yeah, I mean, for the most part, it just seems like Oregon's kept A&M on their heels the entire time, and they've just had to play catch up, and they can do it. But so far, it's not played out that well for them.
Yeah, what they did tonight, they moved Lavalette to right. They put Travis Chestnut, who plays second a lot, in center. Mm-hmm. And they put Caden Sorrell, who's their normal left fielder, back in left. And that's how they did. They got Kent going at second tonight in batting eighth, with Chestnut hitting ninth. Chestnut has just ripped a single into right. Aggies now got runners on the corners with nobody out.
Yeah, here we go. Jeez.
I'm sorry. Chestnut's out. Name is Ollie. Caden Kent knocked Ollie Camarillo to third. So there we go. Now it's Chestnut hitting, and he's been solid for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just jinxed Brock Jones, and I guess Caden Kent must have heard me about waking up. So, but yeah, they're in a good spot now. Runners at the corners, no outs. We'll have to wait and see on that one. But honestly, it was expected too, Chris. I think, you know, with Montgomery going down yesterday, A&M was going to get a little creative, you know, with their lineup, at least a little bit. I think they did it a little more so than I would have thought they did. I mean, they moved people around left and right. They moved Kent, obviously, Chestnut back. Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot more than I would have figured. Sorrell as well. They moved him, and they're going to have to figure that out. If they're able to make it out at College Station, like I think they might, and they still obviously can tonight, they're going to have to, that's what they're going to be thinking about a lot, at least heading into Omaha, as one of their big, you know, one of the big things, at least on their totem pole of scouting issues they have.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of rallies, Kentucky's got one going in the top of the fourth against what I think his name is Stephen Kamatz, or I can't remember if that's his first name, but one of Oregon State's better guys is on the hill. Kentucky's got it strung together a double, a wild pitch, and a Nicholson walk. So they got Nolan McCarthy up, unless this game tracker's frozen. I'm watching game tracker for Kentucky, Oregon State, and the tube for Oregon A&M. So
let's see. Ooh, they got to run across Kentucky.
Okay.
A little bunt play there. That's classic. I mean, we talk about it all year. That little bunt play. Oregon State played that well. It was Daly who scored there, and they played that, or Oregon State, you know, played that well. I mean, they timed it up well. They just got in right before it, and yeah, that's dangerous for the Beavers. You know, if they start doing that to, you, and with Kentucky on the mound, Mason Moore, three innings so far, no hits through three innings, three strikeouts, two batters walked. He's faced 10 so far, and he's at 40 pitches, which isn't bad through three innings. So he's kind of giving a classic start that he's usually doing. And this Kentucky team, man, if they keep it up, they're going to be a dangerous team. And they got on, I think, the favorable side of the bracket if they move on, if we're looking ahead right now. You know, they don't have to face these home run hitting teams that they can keep up with them. You know, they played Tennessee well all year in their series, and they can keep up with them if they want, but I'm sure they'd like to face SEC teams that they regularly see, and you know, they don't have to work. They can play their small ball game more comfortably. So the Wildcats, I think, are arguably in the best spot out of any of these teams once they get to Omaha, if they get to Omaha.
Yeah. A&M, Chestnut struck out. So they've got Jackson Appel up, who had a really good day yesterday. Been a really consistent hitter for them out of that catching spot. And Kentucky, like you said, up 2-0. Kentucky, the road team tonight.
That's weird.
So,
if you want to talk about that real quick, I mean, I think that's weird. I kind of forgot until the tournament started that was the case. But I mean, it makes sense, because at the same time, the way they set up these places for these games, it's like as if it's a neutral site. It obviously is not, you know, and that comes out when the games start. But I think when you talk, I mean, they like do the away teams, like Oregon State, like Kentucky's playing Oregon State's walk-up songs, all that stuff, just because, you know, it's an NCAA tournament game technically. But yeah, I mean, it's the rule. It's really weird. I think it helped Florida today a little bit, if we want to go back to that game, with how they were able to win.
Yeah. Appel has just walked. So Aggies got the bases loaded now for Chase Leva. That's the last guy you want to face. And I believe you've got a righty-lefty matchup here. Yep. Yeah, they're going to have to be really careful how they pitch this one. And yeah, to somebody in the chat, if Kentucky wins, Kentucky does go to Omaha. So here's where we are. Let's set the stage. Florida has beaten Clemson in 13 innings today to advance to Kevin O'Sullivan's ninth Omaha appearance in 14 years. That is amazing. Gators, of course, were the runner-up in the College World Series a year ago. And by the way, two guys from that team have already made the big leagues. Did you know that?
Yeah, Waldrop started today. Did he not?
Yeah, he got lit up.
He got
hit a little bit.
Right.
I don't know what's wrong with my Braves.
The
Nationals own them right now. But in any case, I won't get into that. But yeah, Hurston Waldrop made his major league debut today. And of course, Wyatt Langford made the opening day roster for Texas and is still up. But I think had a home run or a double or something today. So that's pretty. And Skeens, made headlines for striking Ohtani out this week. And
yeah.
That's crazy. Three guys we were watching in Omaha not quite 12 months ago are already doing things in the bigs.
Yeah, and there's guys who are making their way very soon. I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about Dylan Cruz in the national system, you know, as well. And it just continues. And, you know, I side note that I won't get too much into, you know, with the Rays, obviously I pay attention to them a good bit. And Trey Morgan got called up to Double-A. He's moving his way up through that system. You know, he put on a show last year in Baton Rouge. So yeah, a lot of good MLB players. And we're getting to that point now where we're starting to have that discussion. I mean, I think after this weekend, this is totally, you know, a debatable thing. I'm going to put Jack Caglione as the number one overall pick. I mean, unless you really need another position.
I think it's going to be Condon, I think. And unless this little thing in, you know, slump in the postseason has cost him, which I doubt it would.
No. Yeah. They're all up there regardless too. Caglione is going to be up there in the top five. I mean, it's like you pick of the litter, you know, even again this year with some of the guys they have.
Yeah. Excuse me for taking a license. I hope I'm not, but I saw some article that I skimmed about a scout saying that the quality of contact for Condon was the best he like since Barry Bonds.
Wow.
When he was raking. So Condon, I think Condon will be your number one. Oregon did not want any part of Jace Lavalette, got walked. Bases loaded 8-5 now. By the way, Tennessee has clinched Omaha. So congratulations to the Vols going there for the third time in 4 years and what might have been in 2020. A couple teams in the SEC can say that. Marcus Phillips came in and closed it down. They got Kirby Connell out there for an out. And I guess his curtain call at Lindsey Nelson. Did Lanois pitch a third of an inning? I'm guessing Connell's appearance was just to you know, get him a standing ovation and send him on his way. So Tennessee's beating Evansville 12-1. We'll meet Florida State. And I think that's the side that opens things in Omaha, which would be, is it Friday or Saturday? I think it's Friday now, isn't it? Or do they move it to Saturday?
Okay. It's Friday. Yeah. Yeah. And shout out Tennessee too. This is their, I should know this too. A seventh Omaha appearance, I believe, something along those lines.
This is Vitello's third.
It is, yes.
Okay, yeah, I think Rod Delmonico had at least two in the early 2000s. Chris Burke, okay. And Chris Burke played in one, although it might have been late 90s.
We have seven of them.
Seven, okay, yeah.
Seven of them now. Power of a computer, everybody. There we go. So
I saw it on the wall tonight,
right,
at the stadium, and I couldn't remember if it was six and I was counting ahead in my head or they had six painted on the wall.
Right. So seventh for the Vols, first time they've done it too in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Fun fact about that. So
wow,
the first time they've clinched, in front of their home crowd. It kind of an awesome experience. Kind of cool. Cannell got to do it too with how long he's been there. So great story. The number one national seed lives to see another day, and they're going to be a tough out. So now we have two of our teams from the SEC in Omaha, which is nice. So we'll at least have some stuff to talk about next week.
Gosh, Brock Moore for Oregon State or for Oregon just cannot throw a strike.
He started really well too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of that may just be who he's pitching to. Again, you don't want to give Jace Lavalette anything to hit with the bases loaded. And that's why there's such a headache, is they don't swing at bad pitches, and they just drive the ones they get that you leave somewhere. And it's clear they're trying to pitch around these guys and hit the corners, but he's nowhere close.
Right. Yeah. That was a long foul ball.
Kentucky has squandered a chance, I guess, to score any more in the fourth.
Mm-hmm. Right now, Oregon State runner on first, no one out, 0-1 count. I'm trying to see who this is up. Gavin Turley's up for Oregon State.
You know, they've really held Travis Bazzana down in this super.
I've noticed, yeah. He's only had one at bat tonight, but he got walked also. But yeah, hitting wise, he's not been as active as he's been throughout this year. Maybe, props to Trey Bruiser too. He was a big part of that. Oh, they walked in a run?
They walked Hayden Schott. The Oregon's got to make a pitching change. This kid's nowhere close to the zone.
I've never seen so many
bubbles in my life.
Wow. Yeah, here comes A&M. This is I see I'm not. I think I'm behind you right now, Chris, which is
That's a first.
It's not been the case. Cause you're like, I've never seen so many bubbles. And I forgot. Then I look and I'm like, oh wow. That's yeah.
It is an ongoing channel joke, especially when I've got Blake with me, like his feet is like a good 15 seconds ahead of mine. So if you're behind me, then you got some issues.
Right. Yeah. Something's happening.
They're stalling for time is what's happening. They're trying to get a righty loose in the pen. Let's see who they got up now. The Aggies will bring Ted Burton to the plate. Burton was the remember their 4, 5, and 6 yesterday. Just you could not get them out. They had like 8 hits between the three of them.
Right. See, in Lexington, Moore's got a full count. Turley. Let's see if you can get out of this.
Burton has really been a hot and cold guy for them this year. I'm like, he's had some real weekends where he went on heaters and then some where he wasn't much of a factor.
Right.
So I think you've got, based on yesterday, you've got the locked in Ted Burton. Oh, we just got hit in the ribs. My goodness, it is. Texas A&M just scored 3 runs in the last 5 minutes without swinging the bat. Is now 8-7, bases loaded. And Caden Sorrell up, you don't want to pitch to either. He has been so good for them. We didn't do a freshman team, an all-freshman team. If we had, he would have been on there.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Just got it.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is – yeah, I'm way ahead of you then. This is the – I think this is just the how can we kill time to get our next guy in here. No, they're going to go right with him.
They have 2 outs.
2 outs. Bases loaded.
Yeah.
Oh, and he got squeezed on that one. Looked like. They've got 4 guys ascending. If you're just joining us, we have already talked about Georgia. We've already discussed Florida. Alfred was at that game today. We preemptively gave Tennessee the win with an 11-run lead. The Vols did hang on, so we spent a while talking about them. So you can rewind some of that later if you like. Now we're watching A&M and Oregon. I've got an eye on that one, and Alfred's had an eye on Kentucky and Oregon State. Yeah, this is the biggest at bat of the Aggies season right here. Maybe. Well, I'll take that. Add 1 or 2 big ones and. In the regional, but I think this tops everything. You got a favorable matchup with the lefty at the dish. You got a 2-1 count. Let's see if he turns him loose. Oh no, he didn't, and good for good reason. Ball about to hit him in the ankles.
Man, Brock.
Now it's 3-1, and I think Moore's thrown 40 pitches this inning. Man, I almost make him throw me a strike here. 3-1's a big hitter's count, and Sorrell's a pretty good judge, so maybe you just trust him to do the right thing here. Ooh, took one. It's close. It was called a strike, and I think it was a strike.
That's all right. I probably wouldn't have taken the bat off my shoulder either, if I'm being
honest.
Sorrell
does strike out a lot, a whole lot. So now everybody will be moving.
Flash to Kentucky mound meeting right now. Oregon State has 2 runners on. Go ahead, run at the plate for them. No outs. Moore's obviously staying in. He's done pretty well besides these 2 at bats. But
yeah,
just a little reason to tune in there.
And we'll probably wrap it up here in a minute. I'm going to have to see to my family. We're not going to stay on for the end of Kentucky or even A&M.
Right.
And we may wrap these up tomorrow, depending on family schedule. It's camp week around the Lee house. I'm running kids here and there. Fouled off another one. So if you're just joining us, congratulations to Florida. Congratulations to Tennessee. That will be going to Omaha. The Vols will take on Florida State on Friday. And The Gators will await the winner of this A&M-Oregon series. If A&M wins tonight, it'll be A&M. If Oregon wins tonight, there'll be a game three tomorrow, winner take all.
Then Kentucky, Oregon State, Kentucky up 2-0, bottom of the fourth.
Oh, my goodness. Said Sorrell just walked in a run, and that pitch was awfully close. The camera is at a side angle. Yeah, that tied it up. I don't know why they didn't. They must not have gotten a guy warm in time, which seems like a major managerial faux pas, given that Jones has thrown about 45 pitches this inning and is sweating through his shirt and has now walked or hit either five or six guys this inning. I don't know what they were waiting for.
Now it's
tied, and they'll have a pitching change.
Wow. Yeah, he was on the mound two more innings before that, so it's 45-plus pitches, depending on what he threw those last few. The Wildcats do have Cam O'Brien up in their bullpen. I don't think they'll put him in anytime soon, but he's going to be warm, to say the least, when they need him.
Yeah, I've never understood why you don't have a pitcher ready for a big spot. I know you got to take care of the arms. You don't want to get them too hot, but you could see with that kid, he just wasn't anywhere near the zone on most of those. And again, that is not the lineup you want to do that with, because they will not chase out of the zone. And if you groove one, they will hit it a long way. I feel like since Schlossnagel's been at A&M, they were about as well-coached a hitting team as you'll find anywhere.
I'd say this year they have been, certainly. This year, I mean, they have probably arguably the most impressive lineup, albeit there's, you know, home run hitting ones like Tennessee that give them a run for their money. But I'll give them top five in the country, hands down, out of anybody.
I am disappointed in them and their pitching tonight. I just thought that bring more than they did.
Oh, Chris, you'll get a kick out of this comment. I remember when the West Coast dominated college baseball. I guess money rules everything. It's like an ACC-SEC challenge now.
He's not wrong.
No, that's
I hate that. I do. I mean, this is a great game. The one thing I do hate, I was texting a friend of mine today. You would like to see a little more regional balance. You'd like to see the game spread to other parts. But, I mean, Michigan went in 2019, came within a game of winning it all. What did it mean? Not a lot. I mean, you had the Big Ten had pretty restrictive COVID rules, and so whatever chance Michigan had to sort of follow up and build on that, I guess, kind of went away. Then Eric Bakich went to Clemson a couple years later. But, I mean, on the other hand, what you're really doing is you're really growing the game in the SEC. You're seeing two fan bases in particular in Tennessee and Kentucky that are really dialed in.
Yes.
Based on postseason runs. So that's good. I mean, I guess maybe that's a fancy way of saying that they would have wasted this on a part of the country that probably wasn't going to care.
Right. West Coast players playing over here now. Yeah, big example of that. Dean Curley is a California kid who got recruited by a lot of California schools. Yeah, Tennessee has a lot of that. A lot of that in particular. Other schools definitely do too. But they're the one that stood out to me with that. Oh, big update in Lexington. Bases loaded for Oregon State, no outs. Moore still on the mound. Elijah Handline up for the Beavers. 0-2 counts. This is a big pitch.
Okay, and we're back in action in College Station. Ale Camarillo at the plate, bases loaded, two out, tied at 8. So I think after, I think we'll wrap it up when A&M gets out of this inning and maybe Kentucky too.
I think they'll go O'Brien in the fifth if they can get more out of this fourth. He's at 70 now, which is high. Yeah. I didn't think it'd be that high.
O'Brien's been their best guy out of the pen in postseason.
strike three. Got big strikeout for Mason Moore. Fourth of the night for him. That Kentucky pitching, if they can hold this up, they're a national title threat. I mean,
that is going to be a really even field in Omaha.
Yes, it'll be. It's all SEC too, in theory. You know, obviously something else can NC State can win tomorrow, something like that. But it has the likely chance to be all SEC. So that would really kind of throw a corkscrew in everything.
You had four ones on the left side. I think three of them were national seeds. I don't have the bracket in front of me. I think Virginia was not, but probably could have been. And you had the C on the other side, either Oregon State, Kentucky, both ones. Kentucky was a national seed. Camarillo either walked or got hit by a pitch. It's now 9-8. That's 4 or 5 runs without swinging the bat this inning.
These bubbles too.
Crazy. So let's see. Georgia, NC State. That's another one. Florida's a 3, and then A&M is a 3. Excuse me, A&M's a 1. Oregon's a 3. A&M was a national seed. Georgia was a national seed. So you could have 6 national seeds potentially. Almost hit another guy. And 7 ones if this goes in that direction.
Oh, Oregon State walked in a run, 2-1 game. I wonder if they'll take, you got to at least consider taking more out, consider it. I think they'd want him to get out of this though. I mean, I think you're really either hoping for a double play ball or just some kind of, I think that's what you're hoping for. Brady Casper's up, the right fielder for Oregon State. Pretty solid hitter, 270 on the year.
Okay, this is Caden Kent for A&M. Fouls off ball 2. Looked like to me.
Zach said, 5 SEC teams in Omaha? We hope so.
Potentially, yeah.
So we can talk, just run our mouths about it. See, now they're having a mound. Is it 2-0 count?
Yeah, we'll wrap it up here in a second. If anybody's got questions, throw them in the chat. If you got a super chat, that's great. That helps us out. Help pay for my maybe a new air conditioner. Could be worse. I don't think it quite hit 80 here today. It felt like it did.
I know. Clemson was high 80s, touched 90 for a brief moment. Hot. Yesterday was worse. Today, it had some overcast to it. Yesterday, that game was, if you were sitting in a seat, you were on fire the whole game. Yeah. So, trying to see here. Big strike there for Moore. 2-1 count now.
Elijah wants to know, does Tennessee or A&M have a better chance to win it all? A&M was my pick before the tournament. I'll stick with it, but, I mean, two things give me a little doubt. One of them is that, you know, they lost Braden Montgomery. The other thing is some of the pitching that I trusted just wet the bed for them tonight. But, I mean, that's one game. I'm not too caught up. And Prager did yesterday, too.
Yeah.
Tennessee also gets the harder side of the bracket.
Right. And the other thing with Tennessee, too, Elijah, I'll speak on their behalf. Kind of a similar story. I mean, I would have said, yeah, I mean, they're hitting and pitching are putting it together.
Oh, my goodness. Caden Kent just hit a grand slam.
Oh, that was a mile. I just got it, too.
I didn't even see it. You could tell it off the bat.
Well, that cracked this game wide open.
Is up 13-8. This, when we started this was 8-4.
Yeah. Yeah.
8-4 starting this. They put up 9 runs this inning.
5 of them. And like you said, 5 of them were without taking the bat off your shoulder. And now, obviously, this, but that's crazy.
And I just said, you know, no Montgomery, but you know, and look, you would rather have Braden Montgomery playing mm-hmm. for you. No doubt about it. Baseball's a game where slumps turn around in a hurry. I mean, you look at the way Dakota Jordan hit in a regional, and you could see that. So, but the oddity of this is that if Montgomery's healthy, I don't know that Caden Kent's in the lineup tonight. Again, he just hit a grand slam.
Right.
This inning, they have got, here's how they did this. They did walk, single, struck out swinging, walk, struck out looking, walk, hit by pitch, walk, home run. two hits, one extra base hit. And that is pitching to A&M in a nutshell.
Right down the chute there. Yeah, thank you, Elijah. Yeah,
they're gonna so well. I mean, I say that the guy that they just brought in gave up a grand slam. I still think that I didn't get why they didn't make a pitching change with Moore before they did.
No, I know. That's nuts. I think you speaking of Elijah, thank you so much. Kentucky walked in another run. I think they're making the change now, but it's a tie game now, 2-2. Between the Cats and Oregon State. And I think I missed it because we were talking about A&M, but I think they're putting O'Brien in now because of it, which is the right move at this point. Mingione's not going to be dicey with that. He's manager of the year for the SEC. That's how he does it. But yeah, going back and to A&M.
They got plenty of arms. They got Hagenall, I think, has thrown this regional. I think Jackson Novi threw yesterday.
He did.
But I mean, they got a bunch of guys that can throw.
Right. But going back to A&M, because we were on them, and I got flustered because of what just happened there. But yeah, I think the concern, Elijah, with your question and with A&M, I think it's, you know, the pitching recently, it's had its weird moments of, you know, what's going on with Prager, and then even tonight at the beginning of this game. Doesn't matter now. Obviously, A&M's broken this game open, but I think that it's cause for a little concern. Then obviously you have your Montgomery injury. In Tennessee on the other side, I would have been like, if they would have won yesterday, I this would have been Tennessee for me, Chris, you know, hands down this question. But I think the kicker for Tennessee was yesterday. We saw the pitching top to bottom not look as good, and it got fixed tonight. And I think that was the major thing. If you were to tell me this question before the tournament, even, I would have said Tennessee just because of they're coming off of Hoover and, you know, their pitching looked phenomenal. There was guys we didn't even know about who were looking phenomenal in their bullpen. There were guys coming off the bench, you know, who didn't play a lot, like Chapman and Bargo, who looked incredible. And, you know, obviously Bargo had his big night tonight, who looked very good. And that's a hard question. I think that is a very good chance to be the national title series, if anything. And that would be a really good one to have if that were the case. So, good question. I don't know.
Those are the best two pitching staffs in Omaha, potentially. I think, and Kentucky's got an argument. I don't think their arms are quite as good, but I think the difference is A&M's just got three or four guys that can just absolutely shut you down for four, right, five, six, seven, maybe even eight innings at a time if you're talking Prager. I'm just not sure Tennessee's got that. Beam is really good at times. Sneed's been really, really, really good at times, although he struggled coming into this. And the rest of their guys, well, I may say that Causey's been really good too. But, I mean, you're talking about guys that are, you know, just check out the ERAs for Aschenbeck and Sadeo and Prager, although Prager's took a beating yesterday and Sadeo's did too today. But, I mean, those were guys. I think Aschenbeck led the country in the ERA or close to it.
Very close to it. Yeah. If you want to put jumbo reliever up against jumbo reliever for both teams, for me, that's Aschenbeck. And then I take your pick, Causey or Sneed. I take Aschenbeck. You know what I mean? If we're doing that head to head. And even, I guess, if you want to throw Cortez too in there, maybe, if you want to do two on
Chris
two.
Cortez for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I really consider Causey a starter. I know he's not.
Yeah.
But he's a starter who just doesn't start.
right. Because they do that weird Stamos two inning open, and then it's like, all right, go ahead, AJ, do your thing. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. But just for the sake of, you know what I mean, just jumbo reliever by definition.
Yeah,
that's what I think I'd do. And Aschenbeck's the best in the country at that sort of thing. So it's really, you got to give the edge to him.
Well, and I think the other thing, A&M is very handed. Prager, Lampkin, Sadeo, Auchinbeck, lefties, Cortez, Rudis, Peary, Stewart, Moss, all those guys are righties. Tennessee is more, well, Tennessee's got a lot of lefties too. They just right. don't use them as much. Their rotation is all right-handed if you consider Causey a starter.
Yeah.
You know, their lefties, Russell's a righty. I presume you won't see him. Cannell, Stamos. Cannell's a, you know, a soft tosser with an 83-mile-an-hour breaking ball, who actually could be pretty handy, I think, in that park potentially.
Absolutely.
And then you got Binky, who's been pretty good. Dylan Loy's was really good in Hoover. So, I mean, they're pretty, Tennessee's pretty balanced too. Sneed's the arm that of all the guys on that team, I feel like I trust the most.
Right.
Even if it's been a little bulky of late. So.
I think, Zach, Tennessee already beat A&M. Yeah, that was Hoover in one game. I don't know how much stock I'd put into that at this point, especially if I'm starting to think that those two meet up in a national title series. Just giving you a quick spoiler, that's way miles different than that. But good point. I mean, a little bit. That was kind of the kickstart for them after getting the brakes beaten off of them by Vandy and Hoover. That kind of just rewired that team into where they're going now. So that's what I'd say about that. But I think big strikeout for O'Brien. Man, he's been. I love that guy, Chris. He's been on it. And I'm telling you, this Kentucky team, if they continue to pitch like this, they're a hard, hard out. And they kind of, I'm starting to sympathize a little with the Kentucky people, because I see it a lot where it's like, oh, they don't get talked about as much. The pitching doesn't, all this stuff. I'm starting to see it these last few games with them. I mean, it's kind of, it's sneaky with them.
Well, here's what it is with Kentucky, and it doesn't make them a lesser ball team. What gets headlines right now are guys that just come out there and throw cheese with high strikeout rates and teams that hit bombs. Kentucky is neither of those. Kentucky's a keep the ball on the ground kind of team, and it is a manufacture runs in every which. Now, I'll tell you what, I think that park could really play to Kentucky's advantage. In fact, if you get a Kentucky-Georgia matchup in game one, I'm going to take Kentucky. I'm pretty sure, because again, I don't think Georgia's going to go down there and hit six home runs against Kentucky. And I think, look, when a ball, although Fernando Gonzalez is a really good catcher for Georgia, and Kentucky's got one in its own right in Devin Burks. There's a lot of foul territory there. So if you get one by the catcher, a run's going to score.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, that seemed with that park factor being you score less runs than usual, that plays into their favor very, very well with the small ball and more managing those on the base path as opposed to striking them out kind of teams.
Add a stolen base to A&M's tally this inning. And they're finally, did they hit a home run? Nope, it's going to stop just shy of the warning track. So A&M gets nine runs that inning on, let me double check this, on two hits. Kent singled to right. Mm-hmm. Caden Kent had the only two hits for A&M in a nine-run inning.
That's unbelievable.
This was one of those that's baseball days. Like, you will never see that again.
Right.
They were walked or hit by pitches that inning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. That is
another
crazy.
That is nuts. And in Lexington, another O'Brien strikeout. He gets two strikeouts with the bases loaded to keep this game tied. Ooh, that one was close this last at bat. But nonetheless, big stuff from Cam O'Brien. That game stays tied going into the fifth inning of play in Lexington. So that'll be a good one if y'all want to stay up.
Yeah, and by the way, if we did the election, and by the way, Alex says, I think Aaron Combs is UT's best reliever. Pitch for pitch, he is. I just like Snead because he's more durable.
He's
through basically starters innings. Yeah,
right. Alex, I'll say he's very well up there, Aaron Combs. I mean, he might be number one, but I think it's hard. I mean, they have a ton of guys who can come in. I think Hoover for Tennessee made it hard to kind of break that down who it is, because usually he hasn't been playing well either, but Kirby Cannell, take out the super regional before this, had been pitching very, very good as well. And I mean, yeah. He did that will live on in Tennessee's mind forever. Him getting that final out tonight, obviously just winning it in front of the home crowd. But yeah, I think Aaron Phillips Combs got is very well up there tonight. Oh, Phillips, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Cannell was out there.
They did give him an inning in the ninth. Yeah.
Right. So Cannell was out there in the ninth. That'll be, you know, a big picture thing. But yeah, with Combs, he's their default closer now at this point. So he's very well up there as well.
All right. I think let's call it a night. It'd be great to stay up to see if Kentucky does or doesn't do this thing. But I don't think that'd go over well down here. So, anyway, congratulations on the way out to Florida for pulling the stunner of the tournament. Kevin O'Sullivan making the College World Series. You will see Tony Vitello go there for the third time in 4 years. Either Georgia or NC State tomorrow in a winner take all. I'm going to give the heavy lean to A&M with the 5-run lead going into the bottom of the seventh, because I believe they're going to Evan Aschenbach, and they sure did. Yeah, I thought I saw him up. He is in the game now and pitching. So good luck to you, Oregon. Down 5 with 9 outs to go with the best relief pitcher in the country on the mound, probably.
Yeah, tough sledding uphill for them.
So, yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, just closing thought, that Oregon State-Kentucky game could get interesting. Stay up for that. Hopefully we get more SEC teams to close it out tonight. I think A&M's going to, knock on wood. With Kentucky, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But with Georgia tomorrow, that's going to be, you know, kind of it's been a tale of two tapes. So you just kind of got to wait and see what happens with them. Georgia's pitching is stretched. But, you know, if they can be very efficient and use few pitchers on few pitches, who knows? So exciting baseball tomorrow and going forward heading into Omaha.
Yeah, Ryan Waldschmidt led off the fifth with the bunt, but I think it hit him in the box. I haven't seen the replay, but it looked like it live. So that's why he's being called back. All right. Well, we may try to do a reaction tomorrow to just touch on whatever Kentucky does. But anyway, I've got to get on to some stuff here tonight. So they spread the games out on us today. I wish they would have started some of these earlier, but yeah, they didn't. We will be here tomorrow with something. We'll be here for College World Series previews. We got the draft coming up. I think we're going to try to cover that between us too.
Absolutely.
But we'll stay up. I will be keeping an eye on these games a little bit tonight, I think, as I'm able. But in any case, thank you all for watching. Again, if you didn't hear us talk about your team, we've talked about everybody tonight in the SEC, so you can go back and find that later. This broadcast will post on our channel. You can catch it that way. And again, hit the like and subscribe buttons and enable your notifications so next time we go live or issue something, you can catch it. All right, for Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee. Thanks for watching us here at Southeastern 14, presented by Bet Online.